We've educated some people. Thank you, Gia.
I hope so too. Thank you so much. Okay. I appreciate it.
Of course.
Okay.
All right, listeners, thank you. And listen up for Mark Cokefield next week.
Support for KPFK comes in part from the Levitt Pavilion Los Angeles, presenting outdoor concerts starting Saturday, June 28th through August 30th in MacArthur Park. The mission of Levitt Pavilion Los Angeles is to make live music accessible to all, creating stronger and more connected communities while celebrating the diversity of our city and beyond. Further information is available at levittlosangeles.org. That's L-E-V-I-T-T losangeles.org and kpfk.org.
This is Quetzal Flores from the band Quetzal, and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 Los Angeles.
Is the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7, bringing you the latest news and public issues affecting the area students come from, including South and East Los Angeles. I'm Joanne Lyford, and on today's show, we'll turn our attention to the city of Altadena, where residents and business owners are working to rebuild their lives after a devastating fire. As you drive along Lake Avenue and head north of the 210 freeway, the scars left behind are hard to miss. The charred remains of the Eaton Fire tell the story. It broke out January 7th in Eaton Canyon, nestled in the San Gabriel Mountains. Fueled by strong Santa Ana winds, the blaze swept rapidly into the foothill community of Altadena. The toll was staggering. The fire destroyed more than 9,000 structures, including 6,000 homes, and scorched over 14,000 acres of land throughout the San Gabriel Valley. According to the Los Angeles Medical Examiner's Office, 18 people died in the Eaton Fire. Now considered the most expensive national disaster in U.S. history. But in the ashes, there is determination. Despite the loss, many Altadena residents and business owners say they are committed to rebuilding. Student journalists from my Cal State LA University Times community news class have been documenting this story, covering this very powerful story of resilience, taking a close look at how the community is rising again. As you drive through Altadena today, you'll see dump trucks hauling away debris from burn sites. You'll hear the sounds of new construction, clear signs of renewal and rebirth. Now reporters Antonio Cabrero, Christiane Rios, Cynthia Harbo, and Bailey O'Brien offer a reflective look at the fire through the voices of those who lived through it.
It's been nearly 5 months since the Eaton wildfire engulfed neighborhoods in Altadena, consuming nearly 14,000 acres in total. Thousands of homes were left in ruins, while families were displaced and forced to find shelter. In the wake of its destruction, the fire destroyed over 9,000 homes and resulted in 18 civilian casualties. 9 firefighters were confirmed with injuries. Notable buildings like the Altadena Community Church and the Bunny Museum were left charred among the rubble. Former Altadena resident Miriam Irias recalls how that day started as normally as any other one.
We weren't prepared. It was a day just like any other day.
When the fire began in Eaton Canyon, the size of the flames were not that large, but 60-mile-an-hour winds pushed the fire further down, and the sparks soon sent the city ablaze. Arius recalls how thick plumes of smoke obscured her vision on the way home.
I was on the freeway. There was a moment where this gust of wind just kind of covered the whole freeway, and I could not see. There was no visibility. It was really dark. And I've never experienced that living here in Los Angeles. So I quickly gathered my things, and as I was using my phone as for the flashlight, you know, just to gather my things, I saw that there were many messages on my phone, and many of the messages were coming from my husband saying to come home, that there was a fire. You could see the mountains on fire. And it was really scary, and the wind was really scary. It was really strong. And so I just felt this kind of survival energy coursing through me, and really felt like, oh, like, this is real.
For resident Caitlin Bartirono, her recent move to Altadena was cut short due to the fires.
September, October, November, December, like 4.5-ish months, just under 4.5 months. And yeah, it was a very new apartment for me. And I like can't get over the fact that I had just finished painting the interior of my apartment the day before the fires.
Bartirono was out of town at the start of the fires, but upon returning home in the evening, she saw the flames in the distance.
I saw it, you know, around like 7 p.m. and then, but it still felt pretty far from me, and it seemed like it was contained, and at no point did I receive any mandatory evacuation or any notice to evacuate at all, really.
In a report from the LA Times, residents in West Altadena did not receive an evacuation notice until hours after the fires began. All civilian casualties in the Eaton Fire occurred in that area. Despite the adversity, local communities gathered together to support those in need.
There's been a lot of support, and actually that was just like the kind of silver lining, the beauty of witnessing community coming together and just offering support to all the fire victims. So yeah, there's been like, we had a GoFundMe that was created by a friend, so there was financial support.
As Altadena begins to rebuild, its former residents are left to navigate the quieter, harder work of what comes next. For Bartirono and many others, the future remains uncertain.
But just, you know, I've been looking for a new place to live since the fire, and I haven't been able to find anything. And it's just like, that's the hardest part.
For Arius, the displacement has put her in a disorienting position.
We did everything that we needed to do in terms of insurance and whatnot. And I feel very fortunate that, you know, that we were covered, and that is the plan. So like on paper, it looks like we're coming back. And my feeling about it honestly feels a little bit awkward to even think about going back. Because everything that was home is no longer there.
This is Cynthia Harpo.
For many African Americans looking to buy a home in the Los Angeles area, Altadena was where they did not face discrimination when it came to home ownership or opening a business. Many of those homes and business owners are hopeful their neighborhoods will not lose its history. Destiny Durant, Demarian Davis, and Josemary Molina have more.
These ones are free outside, right?
You are absolutely right. They are free.
Do you want a back room?
Sure.
Yeah.
That is the sound of customers inside of Octavia's Bookshelf, east of Lake Avenue in a part of the Altadena community. It's quiet, quaint, and inviting. Nikki High, a Black business owner and a part of the Altadena community, is turning a new page on her business since the fire. Since the tragic fires, Nikki expresses the emotional toll the fire has had on her and her employees.
I live in the fire zone. So on my street, there were 217 houses and there are 12 left. And I am one of the 12. So we have another part-time bookseller, weekend bookseller, who goes, she's a high school junior. At, you know, the school, one of the high schools here, mm-hmm. and, you know, so it was shut down. And then one of our other, employees, had to evacuate. She's in the fire zone. So we were all evacuated. We were all, you know, for me personally, I didn't find out if my house even survived for about 4 days. I actually had a journalist friend who stopped by and she was like, is there anything I can do for you? And I was like, can you please use your press badge to get on my street and tell me if we still have a house? So, we were just overcome. We were, you know, physically exhausted because, 24 hours after the initial evacuation, we, turned our bookstore into a mutual aid hub. So, we actually didn't sell books for the first month of the year, and instead just gave out supplies to people. So, you know, it was emotional in that respect, but also seeing, you know, our community hurting.
Octavia's Bookshelf is one of the few businesses still standing once the smoke cleared.
And so now that we are back operating as a bookshop, we have just been focused on sort of the emotional well-being. So we've partnered with Los Angeles County Mental Health Services. And so we're running support groups twice a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays. We have some other, you know, I'm working with a couple of creators to potentially do something just like fun, mm-hmm. you know? So I have a friend who's a baker and she's going to do a cake decorating class for survivors, like to just do something that's not related to the fire, you know, journaling workshops. And we'll just continue to do that for as long as we have the resources.
Yeah. Altadena has a rich African-American history, with it being one of the only places African-Americans could buy a home.
Black people have been in they were able to purchase homes in Altadena because of, you know, kind of like where the red line stopped. So like West Altadena, when you look at the disparities, right, like 4,300 homes burnt down in West Altadena compared to East Altadena were 1,300 homes. Of the 18 deaths from the fire, 17 of them were in West Altadena. We're not leaving. We're, you know, we deserve to be here too.
While Octavia's Bookshelf continues to rebuild and restore its place in the community, just a few blocks away, another Black-owned business is serving up resilience in a different way. At the Pasadena Fish Market, the legacy is carried not just through survival, but through flavor and tradition.
But so far, we have not affected by the fire, but customer-wise, majority of my customer, about 65% of my customer lost their house. So there and then, you know, it kind of reduced the business as well, because this really always comes. So
As Altadena's African-American community continues the journey of rebuilding, stories like this remind us that loss isn't just about structures. It's about people, places, and the ties that keep neighborhoods strong. While many face hardship, resilience runs deep. In every setback, there's a spark of determination to reclaim what was lost and build something even stronger. The road ahead may not be easy, but the spirit of this community is unshakable, and it will rise together. I'm Destiny Durant, UT Community News.
Destiny Durant joins me now to talk about what this experience was like for her as a student journalist covering the story. Destiny will be a senior in the fall at Cal State LA.
Thank you for having me. So I would like to say that my experience covering the story, like going out and being, you know, in Altadena, it was heart-wrenching. It was, you know, very emotional, I would say, because, you know, you see and you hear, you see things on social media, you hear things on the news and you see things on the news, but nothing is like actually, you know, going there and actually seeing, you know, the tragedy, you know, yourself. And, you know, to see from buildings that you used to be familiar with, you know, just completely gone, it was very, very surprising.
Yeah, I know it was something, because when we were all there, you know, when we were before we started, you know, when you were there to cover the story.
Yeah,
I know other members of your team that you were reporting, your reporting team, were very emotional from the yes. experience and what yes. they saw at the burn site.
Yeah, I believe someone on my team cried because it was so emotional, because it was literally rows of houses just burnt down, houses right next to each other, burnt down. And all you seen left was their chimneys and then maybe the car in the yard. And then the cars were numbered and the cars were all burnt and numbered. And it was I don't even know how to explain it, almost like a movie. It was so heartbreaking and sad to see, you know, like we went by a school. I think it was an elementary school. And one side of the elementary school was completely burnt from the inside down. And the frame was still there, as well as like there's an Aldi over there. That's one of my favorite Aldis. That was also burnt. And so is the, as well as the Dollar King next to it, all burnt from the inside, but the frames are still there. So it was just really sad to see. I think the most heartbreaking thing probably for us to see was the school, besides the houses.
Yeah, because I know driving through, you could see the outside of the building, and it looked like it was okay. But when you turned the street, it was just all burned up inside.
Yes, when you walked up to it, you can see just everything just melting and burnt, you know, on the inside, all the way from the air conditioning units inside of the ceiling. You know, it was so sad, you know, to even think like people, this is, you know, these buildings were where people came and made their money to live, to work, you know, people came to school, you know, houses, mm-hmm. people where people lived. And, you know, it was just really, it was heartbreaking.
Yes. And I know one thing that I found interesting was that they have a whole street of houses burned down, and then there's one that's just looks great. It's perfect.
Yes. Yes. There was actually a lot of places like that. And where I actually did my story, Nikki High was her name. She was actually one of the people where her house was one of the only houses standing on the block. So it was kind of, you know, surprising to see or to hear that from someone. She was telling me that she did not know whether her house was standing or not for about 4 or 5 days. And then finally, she was able to see that her house was one of the only ones standing on the block. And the only thing she could express that she was blessed. And I have to agree with her.
Yes. So as you are, you know, looking forward to in your career as a journalist, what are some of the things that this story, having covered it, do you think will help you moving forward?
So specifically for this story, you know, we focused more on, you know, the African-American community and rebuilding in Altadena. I don't think a lot of people know that there was a Black presence
there. And it was, I believe, one of the only places where, you know, African-American people could buy houses. And, you know, one day I was watching a news and I seen, it was like a clip of a story. And for me, it made me want to tell that story. I don't think people knew that there was that many African-American people in Altadena or Pasadena. You get what I'm saying? So yes. This story has just made me want to go and tell the stories that nobody knows or nobody recognizes, or tell things that, you know, people should know, because absolutely people should know that there are African-American folk that live there. And Nikki High, she owns the bookstore. She actually, you know, lives in Altadena as well. But she was saying how they closed the store down and they just basically became a place for people to come, you know, and get help.
Resource center.
Yeah, resource center for people. Like, she was getting donations. And one thing that stuck with me was, you know, she had to start requesting donations for African-American people, like hair care and things like that, you know. So it just really, for me, I think it made me think about the stories that may seem like low-hanging fruit, which I don't think that it was, you know, but sometimes stories that are like that need to be told because not enough people know about it.
Yes. Very good. Well, I appreciate you sharing your experience with us. You've been listening to KPFK Radio 90.7 FM.
I'm Joanne Lyford. After the break, we will continue looking at how the Altadena community is rising again after the Eaton fire.
I'm afraid that some people may have not been insured or were underinsured, and they might not be able to rebuild. And I'm scared that outside influences will try to change Altadena and try to buy up land because people are desperate. And I just really think it's a tragedy.
Without a doubt, the impacts of the fire were heartbreaking and continue to ripple within the community as they attempt to recover little by little what was lost. In Los Angeles, this is Aaliyah Zabaleta, Angela Yusen, and Andre Rueda reporting for UT Community News. We'll be right back.
As you drive in Altadena, you will see signs of rebirth, dump trucks removing debris from burn sites. You will hear new construction, and businesses are reopening. Student journalists Melanie Reza, Isaac Melendez, and Leslie Hudson have more.
We were able to interview a businesswoman who was very affected by this wildfire. Sipo Shaleen Hearing is the co-owner of Two Dragons Martial Arts and was founded in 1995. She has been in this business for 30 years. Her students come from local neighborhoods and further. This is what she had to say.
We had classes. We had Little Dragons in on the mat. And so students and families were coming in, regular schedule. And then our power went out, and I started trying to investigate how long the power was going to be out. And then I heard, once I did that, told us the power outage was due to fires, completely destroyed. The studio was completely destroyed. Everything around us, everything in that area, if you had an opportunity to drive through the area, it would be a really good insight as to what it looks like. It looks like a war zone hit. It's unbelievable, the devastation that happened in that time frame. You know, everything is a process. I would say, Isaac, that what we have is a massive collective devastation for so many people. The body goes through a lot of different phases from something like this. And so you have shock, you have fear, you have anxiety, you have stress. You have all kind of things that the body continuously takes you through these cycles as you try to figure out what happened, how do I get my feet back on the ground, and how do I get back up and start walking again. So it's a journey. It's a process that you have to go through. And we're all in that process. We're all taking one day at a time, one step at a time. And some days are good and some days are not so good because of the mass confusion, the disorganization, and everybody's in the hurry up and get it done mode. But it's not a hurry up process. It's not a hurry up thing. We can only do what we can do at the time, and we have to breathe and try to keep our mental and physical abilities in check and in balance so that we just don't lose it and cross the line.
Now Hearing has created a solution for classes, helping her students and community move forward.
The future for Two Dragons is live and well, because the building burned, not the people. The spirits are still there, and spirits are strong. I believe in the power of the spirit and the mind. When you have people's resilience, love, compassion, people coming together, holding each other up, those are powerful things. And so we continue, because it is the right thing to do. It's the way we get back up and keep moving. And so I have a studio right now. I have a temporary location, and I have two group in-person classes a week. I also have some online classes. So for me, the location is not the issue. It's how we rebuild and come back together as a community of people.
Even as fires swept through Altadena, Hearing has transitioned to an alternate studio, in person and online, not to just survive, but to support the community through Smoke and Challenge. The community is in full support. You can also support her yourself through her website at www.twodragonsma.com.
I'm Leslie Hudson, and this is UT Community News.
Joining me now is Dr. Lori Barker, who is a Cal Poly Pomona psychology professor who specializes in multicultural psychology. She joins me now to talk about the psychological toll an event like the Eaton Fire can have on a community.
I think two main areas or two main ways that people might react to something. First of all, it's a traumatic experience. If we think about the definition of trauma, like the true psychological definition, it's when you personally have experienced something that's life-threatening, or if you've witnessed somebody else experience something that's life-threatening. And people might not think, oh, a fire in your house, it's not really life-threatening. But believe me, I'm sure all of those wonderful, you know, residents in Altadena who went through it, who got that, you know, the notification in the middle of the night that they need to evacuate, I'm sure that felt life-threatening, right? It felt like a crisis, like an emergency. There was immediate danger. They needed to get out of there. So we could say that this does fall in the category of a true trauma, right? You've experienced something that's outside the realm of normal human experience, where there's some threat to your safety or your well-being. So when somebody goes through something like that, they're going to have a trauma response. And it may not escalate to the point where, you know, let's say they're completely dysfunctional or they're so distressed that they need to go to therapy. It might for some people. But most people can have the symptoms, but they may be at a much lower level. So, for example, re-experiencing the event, like having intrusive memories or thoughts about the event, or when you see or you hear something that reminds you of the event, you can even have a physiological reaction, right? Maybe you want to cry, or maybe you start feeling anxious, maybe your heart starts feeling or beating faster, maybe you get short of breath. So even just, you know, seeing or hearing something that reminds you of that event, that's why a lot of times, you know, people get stressed out by watching the news, because the news keeps showing the pictures over and over. Yes. You may have other things like loss of appetite or trouble sleeping, or you startle very easily. Maybe emotionally, some people, as I said, may feel more anxious. Some people might feel depressed. Other people may even become emotionally numb and say that, you know, they're having a hard time feeling anything. You can have cognitive changes like trouble concentrating, or like I said, having the intrusive memories. You may find yourself avoiding situations that remind you of the event. So all of these things that I just described are common responses to a trauma and also symptoms of PTSD. So I think that's one thing we have to think about, is people who experience this are going to have a trauma response. The second main psychological impact, I think, is a grief response, especially for those who lost their home. Or maybe if they didn't completely lose their home, maybe their home was damaged. Maybe there were meaningful things that they lost in their home. Maybe it's their favorite grocery store or coffee shop or restaurant, or maybe neighbors that lost their home, so their neighbors aren't there anymore, or just life the way that they knew it before no longer exists. That is a loss. And when we experience a loss like that, we're going to go through grief. And most people these days, whether you're in psychology or not, you know, a lot of people know the stages of grief being, what do we say? I'm trying to remember them again now. They're denial.
You have anger, sadness,
bargaining, yes, the sadness or depression, and then getting to acceptance. Now, we now know people don't go through those in linear stages. People can cycle back and forth, but those are the category of emotions that we most often associate with grief. So I think people should also understand that they're going to be grieving, you know, a multitude of different types of loss following this event.
also people that are who had their home is perfectly fine that the fire skipped over, but their whole block is gone. So sometimes people have psychological impacts about that because they were spared, and it just doesn't seem like that's a good thing. I mean, it's a good thing, but they don't feel like it's right that, you know, their neighbors are devastated and they're just perfectly fine.
Yes. The term we use for that is survivor guilt.
Yes, so
absolutely. If you came out unscathed or your home was still standing, but your neighbors lost their homes, yes, there can be survivor guilt.
And also, do people experience like panic attacks sometimes as a result of going through something like this?
Yes, that can be part of the trauma response. Part of PTSD is a panic attack. So as I mentioned, if you encounter something that reminds you of the event, then yes, you can get all those panic symptoms like the shortness of breath, the dizziness, lightheaded, upset stomach, heart racing. All of those things can happen.
And also, well, what are some things if people are experiencing that, you know, this, what would be recommended that they can do? I mean, we are several months away from this back in January, but I am sure there are people who are still having some flashback dreams or things like that. How do they, you know, get back to normal as their life is going to be? Some things will not ever be normal.
Exactly. And I think that's one thing for people to give themselves some grace and be kind to themselves. You know, in the early days of, you know, like trauma and grief research, we thought, oh, people are going to get over these things in about 6 weeks. But we now know that's not true. You know, the immediate crisis might be over within 6 weeks, but people still continue to have reactions afterwards. So I think one thing is for people to just know and understand that and give themselves some grace and some kindness to allow themselves to have those feelings, right? If the crying spells come or the depression comes or you're feeling a little more anxious, to just say to yourself, you know what, I'm still reacting, I'm still adjusting, I'm still healing from this, and that's okay, and that's going to take some time. So I think that's one thing. Another is to reach out for support. You know, even though the neighbors may not physically be living next to each other anymore or may not be for a while, you can still reach out to other people who've been through the same thing. That can be a really good source of support because nobody else understands it the same way that someone who's been through it understands it. Yes. But even also just reaching out to your supportive friends and family members, you know, spending time with the people that you love and the people that love you, I think is important. And also just to do those common self-care things that we all know, to try to stay within a routine, even though your normal routine may have been disrupted, to try to get back to as much of a normal routine as you can, and to make sure you're eating healthy food, drinking lots of water, going out, getting fresh air, sunshine, being in nature, exercising, make sure you get enough sleep. All of those good self-care things are important. And then pay attention, because it's hard to tell sometimes when you've crossed the line between this is a normal trauma response or grief response into maybe I need some help. And one way to tell is how distressing, like, do you feel subjectively that you're not doing well? Do other people tell you that you're not doing well? Are your symptoms, your reactions interfering with your ability to function every day? Are they interfering with your ability to get to work and to do your responsibilities at work, or if you're in school or in your relationships? So if you feel like the symptoms are significantly interfering with your ability to function, that might be a sign that you could use some extra help. And there's no shame in that at all. If you need to reach out and seek help from a professional therapist or counselor.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for this great information. We've been speaking with Dr. Laura Barker, who is a psychology professor at Cal Poly Pomona. And we've been talking about the impact, the mental impact of catastrophic events, specifically the Altadena fire, and how people who have gone through this experience can bounce back as much as possible. And there's another aspect of the community of Altadena that we are finding about that has to deal with your multicultural psychology.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is the ethnic impact. We have a lot of African Americans who lived in the community because they were able to buy a home or start a business much easier than they did in other parts of Los Angeles where they possibly faced discrimination. So mm-hmm. How does this impact that? Because a lot of people want to still stay connected as much as possible so that they don't lose that identity. And a lot of these homes were generational, passed down generationally to family members. And one thing I was thinking about, this is a very expensive place to live. So if you've been comfortable in that mm-hmm. living in a home that has no mortgage, all you pay are property taxes. Mm-hmm. And now you're paying rent and you have to try to rebuild. It's just very traumatic, I would think, to that identity of the community as well.
Absolutely. I think you said it well already. Not much left for me to say about that. But yeah, multicultural psychology looks at the impact of culture on us as human beings, and that culture impacts everything. It impacts our behavior, our thoughts, our feelings, our relationships, everything. So when you belong to a cultural community, like we as Black folks do, it's hard to describe to other people what that identity really means to us. And as you mentioned, that community, the connectivity that we have with one another through shared experiences, through a shared history, through shared survival. And as you mentioned, that community, Altadena, the African-American people came together as a way of protection, mm-hmm. right? When they weren't allowed into other neighborhoods, especially, let's say middle class, upper middle class neighborhoods. They weren't able to get bank loans to be able to buy homes, but they were in Altadena. And what a bond that was, right? To create that safe space for themselves where they could go and they could just be themselves and celebrate their culture and be together and not have to worry about those things. So there's a sense of safety that comes mm-hmm. with the community and that identity. And so, yes, when the place, right, we often don't associate identity with place. But when you think about going home and what does your home mean to you, that is a big part of your identity, right? So if we say, oh, I'm from California, right, there's something about being Californian, or I'm from the U.S., I'm American, that means something. So, yes, for people to say their neighborhood, I'm from Altadena, and there are other people, other African-American people, that just the sense of place and that space really does, it is really intricately connected to who we are and who we see ourselves as people, right? And people of African descent, we tend to be more collective, meaning we do tend to think more in terms of we and us and our, rather than being individualistic and thinking of I and me and mine. So that also is part of the culture that we just naturally gravitate toward and connect with one another. So yes, when the place and the space is disrupted, we definitely feel that on a very deep level. So I think it will again be important to reach out to the neighbors, reach out to those people that your family has lived next to for the last 40 years, and try to find other ways of building that community, even though physically you may not be able to live next door to each other, for a while or maybe ever again, but to still find a way to make those connections and rebuild that sense of community.
Well, thank you so much for joining us. You've been listening to KPFK Radio 90.7 FM, and we've been discussing the psychological impact that the tragic fires back in January have had on the Altadena specifically community. And we've been talking with Dr. Lori Barker, who is a psychology professor at Cal Poly Pomona. So thank you again for joining us. We're going to take a quick break. I'm your host, Joanne Lightford. We'll be right back.
We're back to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. I'm Julie Patel Liss. You may have attended or read about the No Kings protests around the country. When my 10-year-old son Eitan's friend invited him to attend the protest, Eitan liked the idea and asked if he could attend with his friend's family. I was reluctant to send him, though, without my husband or me, since I had read about a dozen or so people injured at the protests, and some of my reporter friends had actually been shot with rubber bullets. But we couldn't attend the protest with him. My husband Seth and I are both journalists, so we can't participate in partisan protests. This confused our friends. "Why can't you?" several asked. What was obvious to us, and at the heart of our core ethics system as journalists, the idea of seeking the truth and remaining independent, especially about issues you cover, wasn't to others. No matter how strong we feel about a given issue, part of our job as journalists is to work hard to remain neutral, without bias, especially partisan ones, and to report what we see and learn so our audience can decide what they think for themselves based on the facts. We gather the facts and research and present them. We're not supposed to be the experts on issues. Why would we presume to know what's best for everyone we serve? But I had an idea. I offered to cover the protest so that I could accompany Eitan to it. I asked him, "Do you want to go as a participant with your friend, or do you want to cover it with me?" His response was, "I think I can make a bigger difference helping you tell the story." And so he did. Here's Eitan interviewing Dennis Punches, who attended the Long Beach No Kings protest June 14th.
Do you think is the most important right now?
I think in general the just overreaching the boundaries of the presidency, that concerns me, because we have a system in our country with checks and balances, and I feel like those are being pushed and broken, and that's why I'm here.
That's what the sign "No Kings" phrase means to you?
No kings. You know, that's how our country got started, is there was a king, and he wanted to impose his will upon the people, and we said the people should have a voice in what happens in our country. And that's why we vote, and, you know, Donald Trump is our president right now, but the rest of us also get to raise our voice.
Long Beach resident April Teo brought her husband and four kids.
I think it's very important as parents for us to kind of show our kids that we do have a voice, right? Like, we can't just sit back and watch when bad things are happening. That's what we all teach our kids, right? Don't be a bully. Stand up for what's right. And unfortunately, we live in a time where what we're seeing in the government goes directly against what we're teaching our kids.
Teo added that it's important to reach across the aisle and have a dialogue to help build bridges.
I do have a lot of family who are on the other side politically, and we always have been, and we've always been able to be in community together because it's been policy and politics. But what we're seeing right now is not politics, it's humanity, it's human rights. And so we're out here trying to let people know, in any other time in history, if we had active military coming against citizens in the United States, both sides of the parties would be out protesting. Both sides of our legislators would be out saying this is not okay. And I don't understand how we've come to a part where we're so divided in our country that even if you don't agree on how many immigrants should be here or on any other policies, how this is not okay. You know, how can Republicans let this happen? And I'm not, but my parents are, and my sisters, and most of the people that I know are, and it's really hurting us that they're not speaking out as well.
Teo said her family has been in the U.S. for many generations. Her dad's side is Chamorro, indigenous to Guam, and her grandfather came from Germany to flee the Holocaust.
Could you read me your sign?
Sure. My sign says, "Democracy is more fragile than you think."
Do you mind if they read me their signs?
Mine says, "No kings."
Mine says, "Families belong together."
Mine says, "Don't make me repeat myself, history."
My brother says, "Be like Captain America, fight, fascism.
Long Beach residents Bill Kessler and Gene Mush attended the protest. Kessler said the lack of conflict of the protests or any police presence in Long Beach doesn't surprise him.
Long Beach has always had a great tradition of exercising their free speech and their political rights. And I think the police know and understand that. And they also know that Long Beach is all about keeping it cool and peaceful. And just showing how we are united against this administration and against the ideas of military parades and shows of corruption of our armed forces and military, and that just shows weakness for us, in my opinion.
Sean Mush said the many veterans in his family would not be pleased at some of the anti-democratic values they're seeing today.
I'm here because they can't be. My father, who is a Vietnam vet, two tours, also served in the submarine service for 5 years, he would be here if he hadn't died last October. He was here when we protested the last Trump presidency when Tom Homan was, lest we forget, was putting kids in cages. And he back down then, we're going to make them back down again. So to give you context, my father, the Vietnam veteran, was wearing this same hat and holding a sign that said, "Trump makes me ashamed to be an American." That's a veteran.
Kessler added this.
Speaking as a son of the American Revolution, my forefather would definitely be aghast as to what's happening now and what's happening today in our great nation, and that we feel it's our responsibility as American citizens to be out here and to show that in one voice, no, we don't stand for this. This is not who we are. We don't go quietly into any night, and we do not succumb to direct opposition that wants to contest democracy.
Eitan had one more important question for the people we interviewed.
Do you have any ways that you think we could try to improve the situation?
Any policy solutions or ways of doing or?
Well, I just think it's really important that we support our judicial system, we support our legislators, we support our Senate, we support all elected officials as they work together for solutions that represent what the people want and that are good for everyone. And so I, again, disagree with Trump's creating special agencies and committees and going behind the scenes and doing things. I also disagree with the use of force and violence against our own people, especially by our military, but that's not what they were trained for, and that's not necessary or needed. His disrespect for governors and mayors of cities and things like that, he is not acting as the president should. I'm Karen Punches. I also disagree with the sell-off of public lands. I'm all about protecting our national parks and our public lands because that's the heritage that we have for the next generation. And it was America's best idea, and I think it still is.
I'm Dennis Punches. Can I also say that I think that we need to have better ways for people to gain legal status in our country? I think that we need to have ways that people can, rather than shutting those things down, we need to actually open up the avenues for people to have legal standing in our country.
For his part, Trump has said in response to the No Kings protests that he has to work hard to push for changes, unlike a king. Quote, "I don't feel like a king. I have to go through hell to get stuff approved." You've been listening to the Cal State LA Community News Hour on KPFK 90.7 FM. The show provides news about public issues affecting the undercovered areas Cal State LA students come from, including South and East Los Angeles. That's all we have for now. Our executive producers, hosts, and editors for this episode are Professors Joanne Lightford and me, Julie Patel-Liss. The UT Community News Class reporters who contributed to Parts 1 and 2 are Cynthia Harbeau, Antonio Cabrera, Christiane Rios, Bailey O'Brien, Destiny Durant, Damarian Davis, Josmari Molina, Angela Yusan, Aliyah Zavaleta, Leslie Hudson, Isaac Melendez, Melanie Reza, and Andrew Rueda. The reporting in Part 3 is by Eitan Liss and me. Our theme music is Contagious by Mark Vard. A special thanks goes to our other Cal State LA faculty and staff, April Brown, Christina Hackle, Tony Cox, Joanne Lightford, Chanel Curry, Nitin Patel, Andrew Gampa, Julian Reyes, Jane McKeever, Joseph Gallegos, Eliel Beltran, Jeff Fust, and Jesus Cruz. I'm Julie Patel Liss. And from all of us at Cal State LA, thank you so much for listening.
This is Chuck Foster. I host Reggae Central every Sunday afternoon right here on KPFK at 2 o'clock, where you'll hear ska, rocksteady, roots, dub, and dancehall every Sunday afternoon at 2 right here on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA.
Support for KPFK comes in part from the Levitt Pavilion Los Angeles, presenting outdoor concerts starting Saturday, June 28th through August 30th in MacArthur Park. The mission of Levitt Pavilion Los Angeles is to make live music accessible to all, creating stronger and more connected communities while celebrating the diversity of our city and beyond. Further information is available at levittlosangeles.org. That's LEVITT losangeles.org.